I had my first viral video in like 2 weeks and I grew up to like 15,000 followers and we were so excited. And I was like, okay, maybe this is it. But then I had a friend who I used to work with in TV who told me about Fiverr. And that's honestly when everything changed for me.
There's an entire generation of Americans who no longer care about prestige, titles, work travel, fancy offices, and lunches. Welcome to Mundane Millionaires, a podcast for this generation of small business owners who want to set their ego aside and focus on what matters: family, community, quality of life, and cash flows. In each episode, Eric Pasifici and Kevin Henderson uncover what it takes to get a little money in the bank, control your time, and invest in building great families and lives. Let's get started.
Eric, welcome back to my podcast, Mundane Millionaires.
Hi, Kevin. I'm starving right now, so this is going to be the shortest cold open in show history. Are you ready?
Let's do it. Should we do this SNL style?
I'm just kidding. Let's see how long you can keep me on here hangry without us having a partnership breakup. What do you think? Well, how many minutes?
I think we got three. The clock is okay. Running.
Tick, tick.
Yeah, what did you think? Great discussion today. I think our listeners are going to love hearing from Kajal Dashti, who's a former news anchor. We go into her background, but former morning show news anchor here in Texas that eventually broke out on her own, first freelancing through Fiverr and then now building her own media company together with her husband, Nate. Just a great story. Curious your takeaways, Eric. What did you take away from that?
Yeah, Kajal's got a great story. And what I was trying to draw out in the story is this transition, because she was a news anchor, W2, getting up at 3:30 a.m., then 2:30 a.m., then 1:30 a.m. She talks about, you know, kind of the expectation creep. Yep. And how that ultimately pushed her out of news and media before becoming an entrepreneur. She was trying to do something different. COVID hits, pandemic hits, and she ends up unemployed, which then leads to her ultimately, for better or worse, getting on Fiverr and doing consulting, or actually doing paid spokesperson work. And then the transition from that, in a period of, I think she said, 8 months of starting a business, Dashti Media. Kevin, I said I was hangry. So typing while I'm talking, come on. I'm just kidding. She starts Dashti Media after 8 months. So it's one of those great stories. And I mentioned this because we had a similar, you know, career arc where once you start putting yourself out there in an entrepreneurial capacity, it will get away from you fast.
Yeah.
And it got away from her fast, where they're now running a business where she talks about how much better her quality of life is, which obviously we push back on that because, you know, yeah, to some extent, you know, entrepreneurship is not all sunshine and rainbows, but also she's making more money. She's got a better quality of life than she had in her W-2. And it happened in a very short period of time when all she did was start putting herself out there. And frankly, in kind of a, you know, we had Sean O'Dowd on the pod a few months ago, and Sean, talked about his experience kind of taking his day job and turning it into, you know, consulting. And she did exactly what Sean pushed in his episode, which is take your specific skill set and apply it in a consulting capacity. She's a news anchor. She becomes a paid spokesperson, and it gets away from her super fast. And she's 3 years into the journey now. So really episode for seeing kind of that whole maturation process. Go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah. And I was going to say, it wasn't even just the high level of like, go get your feet wet on Fiverr and things like that, where she followed the same path of Sean. It was literally like, it's interesting that the principles that lead to success without people talking to each other end up the same, because she did exactly the playbook that Sean opens up. It wasn't just go start freelancing. It was go start freelancing, be very cheap, grind to get your first people, to get your reviews for almost no money, slowly creep the price up and up. And she literally walked through exactly the same playbook. And it's just, it's interesting when things like this work and they work well, you'll hear time and time again, people coming back to exactly the same principles as they uncover what it is that leads to that success. And now here they are building Dashti Media, and she opens up about what they want to do in the future and kind of scale a business, bring in more talent and things like that. And just a great story. I think we caught Kajal at the very beginning of her and her husband's journey. It'll be a lot of fun for us and our listeners to be looking back in the months and years to come to see how they're scaling this.
Well, and it's occurring to me, Kevin, I'm scanning through our list of prior episodes, and, you know, Sean's episode was our third episode. And I wonder how many times we'll reflect on this same story. Because if you look at the Brandon Hall episode, Brandon starts talking publicly, I think it was on Reddit, about real estate tax. And he becomes an expert in, you know, the sub community to real estate tax. And then next thing you know, he's got a real estate tax accounting firm doing $8 million a year in revenue, you know? And it's such a consistent story arc of you start sharing what you know publicly, and then it gets away from you. And I just wonder, and you know, obviously, you know, it's more of a rhetorical question, but how many people have all this knowledge, all this experience that they've accumulated over the years in their W-2, and they share it with nobody except their direct reports, instead of sharing it with, you know, thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people through social media, through these various platforms where people are just gobbling this content up? They are sharing it with nobody, and they're leaving millions of dollars in their career on the table by doing that. And it's really a shame. Not everybody's cut out to do that, but for those of, there are so many people that I talk to that are like, I am getting ready to do this, or I want to do X, and you just got to rip it and you got to start sharing early and often. And I promise you, it will get away from you. So her story really, you know, really speaks to that.
Reinforce that consistent message. Yeah, absolutely. And she comes to the same conclusion as you. Again, this idea of the repeatability of this advice towards the end of the episode, listeners will hear, like, what's the best advice you can give people that want to get started in video content? And it was just get started, get out there, start putting it out there. Stop overthinking what camera you have, what your lighting is, what the perfect angle is. Just get out there and start doing the content and just be amazed at the growth.
And one last thing before we kick it off, but I would just encourage everybody who's listening to, you know, because what we have a tendency to do is we go, oh yeah, she was a news reporter, and so she became a paid spokesperson. Like, I could never do that, you know, but everybody has their thing. Everybody has their thing. No matter what you're doing, there is something that people will pay you to do. And it does not even have to be the long-term play. And if you're, we talk about, you know, certain jobs, certain people can't do it. They're banned from moonlighting. Yep. They're not allowed by their employer. Find a different employer. You don't have to give up the entire W-2 to start the entrepreneurial journey, but you may have to give up that W-2 to go to a different W-2 that gives you the flexibility so you can try. Because I think about so many examples, Kevin. I mean, imagine if I had never sent the first tweet.
Yeah. But both of our lives look a lot different right now if that hadn't happened. 100%.
Yeah.
Well, cool. Let's kick off
with better, by the way. But
I'm probably still stuck in corporate. Not sure what to do with myself. Commuting. I can't imagine commuting again.
Yeah.
So with that, for those of you on your commute, enjoy this episode with Kajal Dashti. Well, great. Super excited to have Kajal Dashti here with us today, co-founder of Dashti Media, together with her husband, Nate Barrett. Super fascinating story. Kajal, you and I met a couple of years ago now in Dallas. You're based in Dallas, where I am. And you were kind of at the beginning of your entrepreneurial journey, if I recall, at the time. So would love to kind of open up explaining what you do, and then let's take a step back and talk through your pathway here. So give the listeners, just to kind of level set, a 60,000 foot view of what you and Dashti Media do in this entrepreneurial journey you're, what, three and a half years into now?
Yeah. So I'm Kajal Dashti. I've owned co-founded Dashti Media, I think, for the last 2 years now. It's a video spokesperson agency, essentially. So we are former news anchors. That's how we promote our content, because anchors have a lot of the ability to, you know, convey a lot of different emotions, whether it's something sad, whether it's something serious, whether it's something funny. An anchor can do a lot of those things. So we're here to help represent people's companies. And for the people who don't want to put themselves in front of the camera, that's kind of what we do. We're your in-house production, essentially. So people will send us their scripts. They'll either want social media content, they'll want training videos, which training videos are really popular with our business. We just did an OSHA medical training video a few months ago. So we create all kinds of content, or even website landing pages. Video, you can do so much with. It isn't just like just for social media or just for your website. You can use video for just about anything at this point. So we get clients for all kinds of video projects.
Yeah. Well, I think that's what was so fascinating when we met about your story, because video production isn't new. It's not necessarily unique. No. There's a lot of video production out there. I think what was really interesting about me and what caught my eye is that you add that extra layer of the on-screen talent.
Yes.
That I think is probably one of the reasons why a lot of companies don't use video to kind of the full extent of how they could in their marketing, their internal training, because most people are generally uncomfortable on camera, right?
Uncomfortable, and it's so much work. Like, you have to go hire first a production crew, and you have to weigh your options between several different production crews because the prices range from all over the place. You minimum usually pay $5,000 for one video, and that may not even include the talent. Then you have to go find the talent, and you have to do auditions. You have to see what talent's going to be right for this specific video. And that's just one video. Whereas for us, it's like, well, you've already got the talent. We're taking care of the production. We don't do on-location stuff because this way it keeps it very, the quality stays consistent. So we keep our studio. It's already set. We have a green screen studio. We have natural background options. Like, this office is one. My office is another. We've rented a home that we've basically turned into a massive studio space for people who want different kinds of backgrounds and not just a green screen. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that. Go ahead, Eric.
Well, no, I was just going to ask you if you have any practical tips, if you've got a partner who's telling you that he wants you to do less video and be less outspoken, if there's any. No, I'm kidding. I really want to talk about the video piece. I think we should probably come back to it, because I want to have a whole,
for sure.
I want to really pick your brain on social media content, because obviously you're an expert in that. And it feels like that's growing. Like Kevin said, obviously video content is not new, but what's interesting to me, because I'm more in the Twitter, the X world than anything else. And obviously TikTok and all that's out there. But, you know, we're now seeing a ton of people on Twitter that were just Twitter personalities that are, you know, walking through their living room with their camera in their face, telling you how to professionally delegate and stuff like that. So it feels like it's exploding. But before we do that, Kujal, tell us, take us from the beginning. Tell us your background. You were a news anchor and now you're an entrepreneur. Connect the dots for us.
Yeah. So when I graduated college, my first job was with the Dallas Morning News. And it was a very brief job because, like, within my first week, I had gotten a job offer from a TV station in El Paso. So that was a very short gig. Thankfully, it was like an MMJ style job. It was one man band. You had to go everywhere with the camera. You had to do all the reporting and stuff on your own. And I'm a tiny girl and didn't want to carry all that equipment. So when I got a call from El Paso to be a social media anchor, I was like, oh, this is kind of in line with what I want to do. It's a morning show. I'm naturally a morning person. So I prefer working in the morning. I have more energy. And it was related to like pop culture content. So a social media anchor reports on anything that's trending on social media. So I would take stories that were, whether they were politics or entertainment, I would take them maybe like, or make them a minute and a half or less, and report on it, show visuals, stuff like that. And then within a few months of doing that in El Paso, I was promoted to the morning show anchor, which was really exciting because I was only 22 years old when I got that promotion.
Wow.
And I was pretty much, I was the youngest morning anchor in all the top 100 markets easily.
Wow.
So I was really proud of that. And it was it was a fun gig. Being a morning anchor, I had a 4-hour morning show, and it gave me all the practice I needed to honestly do what I'm doing now, because 4 hours of reading on a teleprompter for 3.5 years, I mean, gives you a ton of practice. So now I can make it sound like I'm not reading on prompter at all. So it was a great experience. I learned so much from it. I won my first awards in El Paso. I won an Associated Press Award for my reporting on showing the dangers of crossing the Rio Grande Canal, because there was a week where 7 immigrants had died trying to come to the U.S. and we wanted to show people the dangers of why people were drowning so often in the Rio Grande Canal. And I was a competitive swimmer for 11 years. So I was like, put me in the water and let me show people how hard it is.
Oh, wow.
It was pretty
so
wild.
You were actually in the water for this.
I was actually in the water.
That's
I had to
amazing.
Go get a tetanus shot after because I scraped my arm on the side. And they were like, no, you need to go get a shot for this. Yeah. It was hard. I would not recommend it.
Did you complete it?
Yeah, I did. No, I didn't. I had to have help. Like we had a whole Border Patrol unit that was basically controlling the scenario. It was just to show people that the current underneath the water was so strong, like you cannot pull your legs back up. I was stuck.
Interesting.
So they had a rope and I had to just basically use my arms to climb back up. But
I'm going to pull a video of this. We'll put
yeah,
it down so we get to
it's on
amazing.
YouTube.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so it
That's
was a
crazy.
Great gig. And then, you know, it was fun, but it was getting hard, especially towards the end, because I was going into work at like 3:30 in the morning. And there was a while that I was sitting and I was like, I don't see myself being able to do this for the rest of my life. Like, I'm a morning person, but I need my sleep. Like, yeah. I wake up at six. Six is like, that's what I'm saying. I'm a morning person. I can be up at six. I can start working. I could get right to work right away. But going into work at like 1 or 2 in the morning was not for me. And I remember like a few months before I even got the job at WFAA, I had anxiety that was already starting to build. And I was like, okay, you're about to sign another 2-3 year contract and you're about to do all this all over again. So when I got the job here at WFA, I was excited because my family is in this area and I was born and raised here in Dallas-Fort Worth. So I was like, great, I get to go back home. And then my start time, it was like 3:30 a.m. And then they started inching it back to 2:30 and then 1:30. And then finally, they're like, why don't you come in at 12:30? And I was like, I had just gotten married and we had just moved here. And I was like, I can't function. I'm going to bed at 4:30, but I'm not really falling asleep. And I was running on like 3 hours of sleep. And
you were going to bed at 4:30 p.m.?
P.m.
Yeah. Gosh. Get up at like 11 to get ready.
Yeah, literally. Crazy. It was so hard. I was having panic attacks to the point where I would call in. And I know my bosses, former bosses, don't know all this. But I would call in and make up stuff so I wouldn't have to go in because my anxiety attacks were so bad. I was like, my sister has a kidney stone in Fort Worth. I need to go help her. And they were oh, okay. So, I mean,
He's listening right now and he's like, I knew.
So he missed a lot of work, but it was also very short. I was only there for 6 months because at that point I was just like, this is just not fun for me at all.
Yeah. So what happened next? So you said, hey, my life is too difficult getting up this early. So I'm going to go be an entrepreneur. That sounds easier. Or how did that?
No, honestly, entrepreneurship was the last thing on my mind. And I will say I grew up with a father who was a serial entrepreneur. He owned a very successful printing business. He would buy and sell printing machines for newspapers. And that was back when newspapers were a thing. So like in the mid 2010s is when his business started to slow down and he ended up closing shop. And then he went and bought a restaurant, had a restaurant for a couple of years, closed that. And now he owns an aerospace fasteners business. So I've watched my dad my whole life own a company. But yeah. I never wanted to do it because his first company, I would watch, there were months where he wasn't making anything. And we were living off of the one big sale he had at the start of the year. So that kind of stuff kind of drew me away from entrepreneurship for a while. I was really nervous. I was like, oh, I don't know if I want that kind of anxiety. I like the idea of having my paycheck given to me every 2 weeks. So yeah, when I left TV, that was honestly the last thing I was thinking about was starting my own business. I started applying for jobs. But I wasn't getting hired anywhere. No one would respond to me. And I was like, okay, it was hard to go from being a news anchor and then having to figure out how do I take what I did here and now move it into like either corporate communications or marketing or PR. And it was really hard. I remember I would get some interviews and I went from, and I'll be really transparent with what my salary was. I was making by the time I came to Dallas, I was making $78,000 a year, which isn't horrible. Nowhere near what it used to be, obviously 10, 15 years ago in news, but it was good income. And then I was getting offers for like $30,000 a year in communication. So I was like, I don't know. I was like, that's like starting over completely. Yeah. I don't want to take a $40,000, $50,000 pay cut. So my husband at that point had started working in corporate comms at another company here in Dallas. And I used that time to just kind of figure out what I wanted to do next. So I kept applying. And then finally, after a year of applying, I got a interview with, what was the name? Container Store Corporate in Coppell. And I was really excited because they were telling me all the ways that I could move up within the company. If I wanted to learn marketing, they would teach me that. So if I wanted to transition over to marketing, I could. And I was like, well, this is great. I can learn a lot from here.
Yeah.
And the hours weren't crazy. I could go in at 9 a.m. So not 1 in the morning anymore. So I was really excited. But then, of course, March 2020 comes around and the pandemic hits. And they started laying people off of work at the Container Store. So then they called me and they're like, hey, things aren't looking good right now. I think we're going to have to hold off on hiring you. So then it's like panic's ensuing again. I'm like, all right, well, back to unemployment I go.
Yeah, you finally got something.
Finally. Yeah. But I was like, you know what? It's okay. Maybe it was meant to be. But in that time I had my sister and her friend were creating a secondhand fashion app. So I started dabbling a little bit with them in that and creating an app so that we basically created the prototype for the app, but then we learned the app world is extremely expensive. We were getting quotes for like $100,000 just for the...
I've heard this.
I mean, we were just like... And my business partner, who really was the founder of that, I had a very small stake in it. She didn't want to go that route and getting an investor, which I get. It was her business. So it didn't really go anywhere. And then at the same time, I was getting my real estate license. And then I started creating content on TikTok because TikTok was just starting to grow in 2020. And I've always loved beauty content and skincare and stuff. So just for fun, my husband was like, just don't tell anyone, start posting. So I started posting and I had my first viral video in like 2 weeks. And I grew up to like 15,000 followers and we were so excited. And I was like, okay, maybe this is it. But then I had a friend who I used to work with in TV who told me about Fiverr. And that's honestly when everything changed for me. Because I went on Fiverr, I was like looking into it. I saw voiceovers. I'm like, oh, I could do some voiceover work, sure. But then I saw spokesperson videos and I'm like, wait a second. So I started scrolling, kind of watching all these different sellers, what they were selling, what they were, the service that they were selling.
Their offering, yeah.
Their offer. And I was like, oh, this is really similar to kind of what I did in news. Very similar. I just have to get on camera and read off a teleprompter. I could do that. So I created a page and I was just like, let's just see where this goes. I'm just going to open it. It was, again, I had a little bit of everything to see which one stuck and then which one I was going to go down the path of focusing on.
Yeah.
And obviously it ended up being Dashty Media. We were at first thinking it was going to be our TikTok, my TikTok page.
You're going to be a social media influencer.
Yeah, yeah, social media influencer. That is a heavily saturated world. Everybody
well, especially
wants
to in be beauty
one.
Too, I think, oh, right? Yeah. It's probably, of the social media influencers, it's probably got to be one of them saturated.
The toughest one, I think, to get into. There's so many beautiful women and guys who are in that world. So it's kind of hard to stand
I've
out.
I've never noticed
it, you know?
That in social media. I've never.
Oh, yeah. It's probably not on your FYP.
Not on my feed. No, I don't.
Eric just gets EBITDA and free cash flow videos.
Yeah.
Just business.
Daily. Yeah. I get a lot of pizza content. Maybe that's why. Well, let's pause there for a second because that's such a, it's a, you know, we had Sean O'Dowd on the pod a few months ago, and Sean's path similar to yours, you know, corporate guy. Yeah. Was working at, I think at BCG, if I remember correctly, and then went through the consulting ranks and started there on Fiverr as well. And, you know, that's such a, I think, a smart way to become an entrepreneur. Tell us about your experience kind of getting started on the, you know, the with the consulting side hustle and then how that transitioned ultimately into Dashty Media.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Fiverr, I will say, has a really, I don't understand why it has such a bad rap. I think it's the best place to start a business because it kind of teaches you everything. I did not take any business courses in college. Now I look back, I'm like, why didn't I do that? So it was a way for me to kind of get my feet wet and kind of learn how to manage this entrepreneurial space or freelancing space, so to say. But it was just, it was a slow start. I had like a couple orders a month. I started extremely cheap just so I could get some reviews. And I slowly started inching up like my prices and my offer. And I was really marketing the fact that I was a news anchor because I didn't see anyone who was a former anchor on that platform, at least under the spokesperson category. So after like 2 or 3 months, we saw pretty good success. I was making a couple grand a month. And that's when I was telling my husband, because he was still working at corporate comms at the time. And I was like, maybe not a bad idea. Maybe we did this too early. We look back, maybe we pulled him out of work too early. But in a way, I was like, why don't you come work with me and we can make something out of this? Because I even made an account for Nate. I was like, I'll manage the account. Anytime you get a script, I'll get everything ready. You just need to show up. And he was working at home. So it was so easy to do. So again, we saw the need for it and the demand for it. We were getting so many orders. We started inching up our prices. And then, but the hard thing with Fiverr, I will say that a lot of people are not wrong about that I've seen, is it does kind of get you stuck. Because, I mean, now, like, we have our minimum to get into our studio is $2,000. And we're competing with people who are offering $100 for video. So, but there's obviously a difference in delivery, the talent, and the quality of the video. I will say, I get a lot of people who go from the other sellers who come to us and they're like, we need to redo this video. It didn't turn out the way we wanted.
Well,
and
I just pulled up his LinkedIn. He's a handsome guy, too. That doesn't
hurt
anything.
Yeah. Yeah. No, not at all.
Looks like well, I'm sure because I'm sure that's what it made it interesting, because then you could offer male and female on-camera talent.
Yeah.
You could combine your off-camera talent across the two of you as well.
Exactly.
Yeah.
He looks like a tech
CEO. He looks like he'd be like the founder of...
No. He does look like that. It's the glasses.
Yeah,
probably.
He's got like a very smart, like cool vibe to him. Yeah, I'd hire him.
No, he's great.
You'll have to pass
I love
that feedback back.
I will. He's gonna love to hear that. No, but starting this together was just—it's so much fun. I met my husband working with him. We met in El Paso. He was the morning anchor of the CBS morning show, and I was the morning anchor of the Fox morning show. But it was a duopoly station, so the company owned the CBS and the Fox station. So our desks were also next to each other. We lived in the same apartment complex. So we were always together. So working together, I know a lot of people are like, how do you work with your husband? And I'm like, well, I mean, I've been working with him since 2015.
Yeah,
so
this isn't new with Dash.
This isn't new. No, and I always wanted to work with him. I remember when he was always, when he was working at his corporate comms job and they were back home, he was working from home at that time. I was like, man, this would have been so much more fun if he could just, we could work together. This would be way more fun. I think, you know, we already do everything else together. Why not work together like we used to?
How did that conversation go? You said, hey, come home and work with me. And did he hesitate at all?
Oh, he didn't. No, he didn't hesitate at all. Because at this point, and I will say, the problem with the pandemic was, and something I noticed with my husband's job was, now that he was working at home, they were demanding more.
Yeah.
He was not, he used to have to only stay at work until 5 or 6, 6 the latest. Now he was working until 7 or 8 p.m. and hardly got a lunch break because he would eat while he was working. It just, that line got blurred between work and personal. So
I experienced the exact same thing in a corporate job during the pandemic.
Exactly. Yeah. It was just exhausting. He was getting burnt out by it. I could tell he was unhappy. He was losing a lot of weight because he was so stressed. So I was like, let's not deal with that. Why don't you come work with me? Let's just, he was not all for it at the beginning because it was kind of scary. I was not making that much for him to just leave the job, but it was a risk. And at the time we were also getting the pandemic money. Now that I forgot what it was called.
The PPP stuff.
Yeah. It wasn't a loan. It was like that. I don't know. It was
you were getting a monthly check.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we were also using that to help start the business.
I got lost in the mail.
File that report. Yeah. Like I still haven't gotten it.
Right.
So yeah, it was honestly a no-brainer to start this business together. And it was his idea to even call it Dash D Media. I wasn't even going to leave Fiverr. For a while, Fiverr just seemed like the easiest place to stay. My husband is the guy who likes to geek out and really like, you know, learn more about what we were doing. So he was like, no, I think we really need to get off the platform and do our own thing.
Okay. So you went into this thinking, I'm just going to grow a bigger business on Fiverr, Upwork, whatever. Keep doing
Never thought doing my own business. Yeah, he was the one who kind of saw something. He was like, let's brand ourselves. Let's do something with this. So then we had a website made. We went and got a marketing team, which we deeply regret now because that was a first-time founder mistake. But that's okay. We learned from those mistakes. But we've learned. We've all done that. But we learned so much from even that mistake. We're like, okay, we got into marketing before we knew enough about our own business. That was the mistake. It was so hard for us to explain our business for a while, but now I feel like it's getting easier. And then we have all these examples. We have so many great testimonials. I have never had less than a 5-star review. I've never had a refund on any of my orders. And a majority of, I would say 85 to 90% of my clients come back and they want another video. So
that's great.
It's really good. And in the last 2 years, we've even brought our margins down even more. So like we're doing well enough to where I feel like maybe by the end of the year, my goal is to get more talent. I know a lot of people who are leaving the TV world and want to do what we're doing. I just need the right customer so I could do that. Because if, let's say, someone in New York wants to do social media videos, if I know a guy that left TV in New York, I think it would be more beneficial for their audience if they had someone who was a former TV person that people kind of already know about. So it's the credibility that I love to sell our business with, because, I mean, that's what you're getting with our talent.
Well, let's talk about the transition. So you went from news anchor to consultant and then into Dash D. Well, how did it happen? Like, what was the time period from each step?
I left TV in June of 2019, and I was like only 6 months into the job, so I didn't last that long. And then I didn't start even freelancing until October 2020. So it was like a year and a half before I even... I took a really long break.
And the applying.
Exactly.
And then how long were you doing the freelancing through Fiverr?
Freelancing through Fiverr, I did for 8-9 months before we started Dash. We launched, I started Fiverr October of 2020. We launched Dash D Media in August of 2021.
So I think that it's really interesting. Kevin and I had a similar experience in launching our law firm in that I started talking about small business M&A, which is ultimately what we largely do now. And it felt like, Kevin, if you remember, like it felt like a really long time, but I think it was like 6 months of just tweeting about small business M&A before it became we were so overrun with work that we were like, okay, we kind of have to start a firm. Like it's just feels inevitable. But it felt like it was much longer than 6 months. But I think the point here, the message for people who are listening, hearing you say 8 months, I'm saying 6 months, is when you get out there and if there's product market fit for what you're doing and you tinker a little bit, it will get away from you faster than I think most people realize. Yeah. The opportunity, once you make that first dollar on the internet, it really is a big mental shift where you're like, I can never go back. You know, you're on a trajectory now that, for better or worse.
In the first few months of even working on Fiverr, that's all I could think about. I was like, I could never go work for someone again. Now that I know I could do it on my own and not be told what to do all the time or somebody owning my likeness. That's the thing of with TV. They own your likeness. They own everything. They own your name. I remember when I was in El Paso, I had bought all this equipment so I could start creating beauty content on my own on the side because I really loved posting to social media for fun. But then the station comes by and they're like, okay, we need you to do this and this. And I'm like, what? I bought all the equipment. I'm doing it on my own time at home. I'm not even doing this at work. So then once I was like, okay, well, I got to put this on the back burner because I don't want someone else to own something that I'm putting my money and my time into outside of work. So having that, it's a big freedom that I don't want to lose again. I love owning my likeness.
The limitations on moonlighting, I've always found that to be very interesting. We had that in Big Law too. They said you cannot work on the side. Now, I understand, you know, not being able to go out and do legal work, but telling me what I can and can't do with my free time always felt like a little bit of a weird thing, but that's many corporate jobs. But real quick, before we transition to talk about Dashty, what advice, you know, so for those people who are listening, they're in their car, they're like, I'm sick of my job. I want to try something. I think I could go sell my time on Fiverr or Upwork or whatever. What advice do you have for them in terms of getting started and seeing the type of success and traction that you saw in 8 months? Yeah. Obviously, not everybody's going to be able to do that in the news anchor spokesperson context, but just generally speaking.
Well, I say just get started on one of these freelance platforms like Fiverr or Upwork. I think that's a great place to start. Success is not going to come overnight. It's something you have to kind of build up to. You start small and you build your way up and take something. I mean, you can not just take a passion. You can take something, a hobby, a passion that you're interested in and make money off of that. Or what you're doing for that company, you could do on your own as a freelancer. If you're creating social media content, if you're like a social media manager for XYZ company, you could quite literally go do that as a freelancer and do it for multiple companies and make a lot more money than what you're doing and just with one salary. So anything really, you can turn into your own work.
And let me ask a follow-up there that's on the same vein, but a little bit different. And I want to preface this with the fact that I've had this discussion with a lot of people. You know, friends, colleagues, things like that, that like don't like their job, want to do something else. They know what I'm doing. And they're like, man, that's so amazing and fascinating, like buying a business and whatever. And I tell most of them who have professional skills in almost every instance, what you need to start doing is get on Upwork or Fiverr and start doing some side consulting to see what the right skills are. And I think you're going to find in 6 to 12 months, you're going to make 2, 3, 4 times what your salary is. You know, freelancing or consulting. Yeah. You want to guess how many people have actually done that? Like zero, not even one.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious, like, what was the difference maker with you? And maybe it was the unemployment, or I don't want to put words in your mouth, but what was the difference maker for you to actually be like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to get after this and see where this goes versus so many other people. And I have to assume you've probably had similar conversations with people of, hey, try this out. And like, they don't do it. There's no uptick.
No.
You know?
Oh yeah. I've had actually several people who will reach out, who have reached out to me and want to do what we're doing, and I'll offer to help them or give them some pointers into doing what we're doing. But I also think it depends on the person. You have to want to do it. I wanted to do it. I didn't care what anyone thought of me. I mean, I was like, what are my former TV coworkers going to think about me now, like selling my stuff on Fiverr?
Probably.
Yeah. I think people care too much about what other people think, and that's what keeps people from taking a risk. And honestly, everybody's just worried about themselves.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. Yeah.
Eric, I'm curious if there was a little bit of that for you. I certainly felt some of that early on in our journey of like, what are my Big Law friends, all those guys who are going up for partner now and stuff. And they're like, oh, look at these guys. Yeah. Like they couldn't make it, hanging their own little shingle. Now I'm like, you know, it's funny because it's just the tables have totally turned and I'm just like, I feel bad for the road you're stuck in. Like, I'm so much happier what I'm doing. But did you experience a similar thing, Eric?
Yeah, I mean, totally. Right. I was very nervous about posting on LinkedIn. Right. And it's dumb because I had like 50,000 followers on X. And I remember having a conversation with my friend Matt, who's also a social media influencer in the legal profession. He does more like TikTok and kind of humorous stuff. And I was like, man, I just have like this mental limitation because I'm worried about what all these former colleagues of mine who are serious people in the law some of the best lawyers in America are going to think about me being this like social media lawyer. And he goes, bro, like you have 50,000 followers on X. He goes, you think they don't already know? He goes, everybody knows, man. He goes, just post. He's this, they're going to be the ones that are going to be, you know, worthwhile people in your life will be encouraging. And what's interesting, mm-hmm. and I think that this is such a mental limitation, and not everybody is meant to go out and do content or put themselves out there publicly, but it's such a mental limitation because there are so many incredible people who spend their whole career amassing all this incredible knowledge and valuable experiences and insights, and they share them with nobody. And they're leaving millions of dollars of value on the table in their career by not simply just sharing publicly the things that they've learned, even stuff just around like the professional experience. If you've been in the workplace for, you know, 20, 25 years and have seen multi-generate, you know, very different work environments from what it was 20 years ago to what it is today, there's a ton of value in those insights that you could share and make millions of dollars. And that, and to round out your question, Kevin, I thought I would be sharing this with 500 people who were directly in my network. And what I realized is there are millions of people. I mean, I had 315 million impressions last year, millions, so many orders of magnitude more people than the people that I've met, that if they think I'm a bozo, it literally doesn't even matter. It's so inconsequential in the big picture. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so more people should really, not everybody, but a lot more people should be monetizing that. Those experiences. For sure.
I was scared to post for a long time about Dashity Media. And I remember once we finally did start posting to like Instagram and LinkedIn, we were both like, why didn't we start this sooner? I got orders off of social media. I mean, I have Fiverr at this point now as just a lead gen thing. I don't use, majority of my orders are off of Fiverr and through our website. But if people find me, sometimes I had a client up in a law firm in California who ordered a video from me. And she was like, I've been watching your Instagram videos. And I want to order a video from you.
Oh, that's awesome.
I may become a retainer client. That's really exciting as a small business owner. I mean, I'm still only in year two. So to have social media be that powerful, I mean, that's a great tool. That's marketing in itself. I mean, without even ads being put behind it.
One of my favorite stories too, it's all different types of business. And one of my favorite stories is a local guy who I really like. This guy, he's a realtor. And he built a YouTube channel. And like within 2 years, he went from just, you know, average, you know, residential realtor to having a brokerage of 40 people and bring in like 800 leads a month off of this really cool YouTube content that he makes. And it's all local to our area. And it's amazing to watch, you know, an ordinary, and no offense to him, I think he's a spectacularly talented person. That's why it resonated. But how many other people out there that have that capability that just never make that first video? And so maybe that's a good segue into talking about Dashity Media, but it's...
Well, I will say that a lot of people who are interested in making video expect that first video to go viral. And I think that's also a mistake. They think, okay, once I make this video, I'm good. My business will be successful. No. Like, just like you said, that the example you were just saying, it took him 2 years before his of creating content, before anyone... I mean, in news, and I'll say something that my husband was told and it's always resonated with me from one of his former news directors. When we sign 3-year contracts, the station is losing money on us on the first year because no one knows who we are. They're taking a risk on us. By year two, people are starting to get to know who you are because they're seeing so much of your content, whether it's on TV or on social media. By year three, majority of people know who you are. And that's when you become a little bit more valuable. So it's almost like you just have to stick through it. And that's something that I always push even with Dashity Media and a lot of the content that I put out there. So people realize you're not going to get virality or make a crap ton of orders on your first video. It's going to take a few videos. People have to get to know you. They have to get to know your brand. They need to know about your company before they feel comfortable doing more with you guys, so to say. But
yeah,
video takes time.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's talk about Dashity. So you decide to... Did you completely quit Fiverr to launch Dashity, or how did that transition
happen? No, I promote Dashity Media, actually. The thing I like about Fiverr is they let us promote our business. I'm not allowed to put my URL on there, like the link to go to my website, but my branding is all over there, also in hopes that if someone sees it, they'll just go to my website and contact me so I don't lose 20% of my order.
Be less expensive, yeah.
And they don't get charged another five. The thing I don't like about Fiverr that they do is I take 20% from me, but they also add another 5% on the buyer. So it's just, it makes it a little bit more expensive, especially a high ticket item like ours. Yeah. So I prefer when people come to our website because then you're cutting that 5% cost already as it is. But no, my Fiverr is strictly a lead gen at this point. I do a few orders on there. I don't ever push people off of there if they don't want to. And I can't even talk about that on there because if I do, they could shut down my account. But it's such a good lead gen. I did a video for Comcast a couple years ago. It was all through Fiverr. So Fiverr does have really good companies that go through there. Yeah. And they look around, but then they'll usually come contact us on our website and forge a connection through there. But no, I'm never going to get rid of that Fiverr, at least not for a while, because to me, it's a great lead gen. It's another place where my business is being advertised.
Right.
And I'm a pro level seller on Fiverr. So they push me out to like a lot more people too. So that helps. So yeah, I have all my branding on there so people know what Dashed Media is.
And has it just been Fiverr, or have you used some of the other platforms like Upwork and things like that too?
Just Fiverr. The thing I do like about Upwork more, but I haven't done it. I've gone on Upwork is I think they take only 10% of the seller's earnings, which is better than Fiverr. But they were not very friendly to us branding our company on there. And I didn't want to get away from that. So I just stick to Fiverr and my website and then social media. I get messages on LinkedIn or Instagram, and that's usually also how I get business. But yeah, I won't get rid of Fiverr anytime soon.
So now 3 years into that journey, what is like, can you break down what your general lead sources is? Like how much of your business comes through Fiverr? How much comes organically through SEO? How much are you driving through social media?
I would say it's 50-50. I don't think it's a majority either or. I get pretty good leads from Fiverr, but when people find us on our website, they're usually finding us through social media. So I can't tell on my website analytics from which social platform they're coming from, but it's either Instagram or LinkedIn. I don't think Twitter, my Twitter is not, it's still all just news people following me. So I don't think Twitter is like a big one or X, whatever it's called now. But LinkedIn yet.
I'm going to convert you here before we get done with this podcast.
I know, eventually I'm just going to.
Eric will make the sales pitch.
I just tagged you in a post, so we're in trouble.
Oh, great.
Yep. Your life has changed forever.
Forever from this point forward. Yeah. But yeah, no, I think it's Instagram and LinkedIn that are the big ones for me. I like LinkedIn. I know LinkedIn gets a lot of flack, but it's helped me connect with a lot of business.
There's a different type of person on LinkedIn. I mean, there's a lot of overlap, but you know, certainly it's a little bit more of like the buttoned up, like faux inspirational content. And they eat it up. They love a good like inspirational.
I see them shared on my feed every once in a while. I'm like, oh, inspiring. Yeah.
If you've overcome anything in your life, put it on LinkedIn. They will just go to
take
town.
Off.
Yeah. So 3 years into entrepreneurship. So you were getting up at 3 a.m. It was brutal life as an anchor. You're now an entrepreneur. Talk to us about your quality of life as an entrepreneur, what that experience has been like.
It's a complete 180. I don't have to wake up that early. I have not used an alarm since I left TV. Also, I wake up on my own at like 6. My body is annoying. It could be on the weekends and I'm just like, I could go to bed at 1 a.m. I'll still wake up by 6 or 7. It's just my body clock works that way. So
That is the best sales pitch for entrepreneurship I've ever heard. I haven't set an alarm. Like, honestly, that's...
It's great. I don't want to hear that alarm chime anymore. That was hardcore PTSD from the TV days. I don't want to wake up that early anymore. If I don't have to, I don't want to. I don't have to work as many hours. There are days where I have 12-hour work days that I'm grinding on my business. There are days where I work 4 hours. There's been a few days where I've only worked maybe 1 or 2 hours on my business and I have to go get other things done, or because I'm on two boards, it gives me time to also do work for the two boards that I'm on. Mm-hmm. So those are things that I could never have done if I was in TV. There was no way. I mean, I think about they required us in TV to like go to a certain number of events. And I remember at the end, I couldn't do it. I was like, I genuinely need to sleep. Otherwise, I'm going to die.
And feel free to, you know, to answer this as vaguely as you'd like. But yeah, are you making more money as an entrepreneur than you were as?
Okay. Oh, yeah. Easily. So easily. I'm making more money.
I
made at least 10, 15 grand more than I did in TV.
Okay.
And I work less. Awesome. I don't have to wake up as early. I'm only in year two. I want to make more.
Sure.
Yeah.
But it's baby steps and I'm okay with that. As long as I'm doing better than I was when I was a W-2 employee, I'm good.
And that's taking into account your husband as well, who also gave up a salary, right?
Slacking me right now, telling me to stop asking about your salary. So sorry, Kevin.
I am not doing that for the record.
No, I'm an open book. I don't mind talking about that stuff because to me, it's better when people know especially in the workforce, I think it's good when people know each other's salaries. I think it's weird to kind of hide that. I know management likes to have those things hidden for obvious reasons, but I think it's good for people to know how much they're making.
Totally. And I think full disclosure for the audience who is considering entrepreneurship, you know, it is nice to know. So it sounds like quality of life is better. And obviously we can dive into that because I suspect there are elements of it that are not better. But the one thing you mentioned very early on in this was talking about your dad's experience and the fluctuation in income that you saw with that initially deterred you. How have you found kind of the frequency of pay and kind of the way, or is all of your work project-based?
It's a great question.
You know, you were worried about dad, you know, dad's pay and the big sale at the beginning of the year. And now, you know, how have you found that?
Oh, I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have those challenges sometimes too. Yeah. But because we have such good margins, I can go a month without business, which is okay for me. I use that month to create more content and to try to get more eyes on our business. And then at the same time, because we're a little bit more of a high ticket item, it takes longer for an order to go through. So we are working with mid-sized companies that they go a little bit slower. Their copywriting team is just not done with the script yet. So we're stuck waiting. Like, we were supposed to start a project last month that's now getting pushed to April. So, and that happens, which we're okay with it. I still do small orders here and there on Fiverr that keep us well afloat. But then we have like some orders that come in that are really big and they help honestly manage the business for the next several months where I don't have to worry if I don't get another order. I want that to change, obviously.
I have a friend, I won't say her name, Kevin, you know her. And this is not a indictment of your dad, by the way. It's just kind of a funny anecdote. But she had told me a similar story. She'd said, you know, he was an entrepreneur when I was a kid and we were constantly worried about like no presents at Christmas and are we going to lose the house? And really good times, you know, flying around in a helicopter and then like really bad times. Aww. She's like, I never wanted to be an entrepreneur. And then she became an entrepreneur because that's just what happens. And she goes, then I just realized that my dad was just a shitty entrepreneur, you know? And
it's just bad at money management.
He was just a crappy entrepreneur. Yeah, I thought that was a pretty funny story.
Well, my dad was like a very old school entrepreneur and he still is. He will not use social media. I've even offered to do it for him. I just know he won't post it and I can't manage to run his social media on top of my social media and also the boards that I'm on because I help with their social medias. But my dad never did any marketing and it was amazing how he did. He had a very successful, he made several million on his business. Wow. So I know he did very well, but it was so interesting. It was just either word of mouth or like referrals and stuff like that he would get that would bring him business. So
we see it in our clients buy, 90% of our clients are buying businesses through our law firm. This is not affiliated with the law firm, but what I think I see a lot of, Kevin, is really successful guys and gals on the sell side. That they just hit a point where they were like, because entrepreneurship is brain damage and building is brain damage. And sure, to your point earlier, like I'd like to make more money. We all would like to make infinite money. Yeah. But I do think we all hit a point in kind of the building process where either we can't take it any further because we don't have the capability, or we just go, I don't want to take it any further.
We lose the steam.
I'm making enough money and this is awful and I'd rather just go play golf or whatever. And not everybody's playing golf, obviously.
I haven't hit that yet, thankfully.
So, but you painted a pretty rosy picture of entrepreneurship where you said it was way better than the 9 to 5.
Yeah, complete 180, I think you said.
Tell us what has not been better, because surely there are components of it that are not better than...
Yeah, what's
it's
been
the
hardest?
Months when there's no business. And it's not like it's months back to back. It's usually 1 month. And because we always have... It's usually February was our slow month this year. And then usually it's around August when people are getting ready to go back to school and a lot of people are taking vacations. August is usually another slow month for us. And it's always that first week of not getting a message where I'm just like, Nate, I think this is it. I don't think we're going to be, I don't know if we're going to make it. I just don't know if we're going to make it. And then next thing you know, we get a request for an order on our website. And it's like someone above is like listening to us panic. And then they send us like a little sign. So no, there are days where we panic or we cannot for the life of us figure out how to market our business. Because I did not come from a marketing background. I came from a journalism background. It's kind of different. And at least my husband has, Twitter.
Yeah, you got to get on Twitter.
Twitter. She's on. She's
got to keep using Twitter.
She's got 2,500 followers. She's
I mean active. Yeah.
No, I do need to be more active on Twitter. I'm a lot more active on LinkedIn, but I'm now starting to think maybe it should be Twitter.
Twitter.
That's the one I should be on.
Twitter.
I do like that they're incorporating video.
They are. That is your emerging playground because all of these Twitter personalities right now, myself included, are going, I just called myself a Twitter personality, Kevin. That was just like a very weird moment. That was very weird for me.
So this is where you move social media influencer in front of attorney in your bio.
We're gonna edit that out. But I'm seeing everybody do it, right? Everybody's moving to the video content, and Elon is mm-hmm. pushing the video content. So if I'm in video and media, yep. I am hitting Twitter hard to try to be,
somebody
who's getting a lot of these accounts into video. But and I had a really good
That's
question.
That's the only reason I pay for that blue check mark is so that I could post longer form content because I can't post anything longer than like a minute or a minute and a half.
Yep.
So no, I've posted some video, but I need to post video to that thing like daily, like I do the other.
Do platforms. You ever feel like you have the right amount of work, or is it always too much or too little?
It depends on the day. I feel like there are some days, again, those are like the 12-hour days or the days that we have projects. Because again, right now we're just a 2-man team and then we have an editor overseas in Europe. So we're still a very small team and we do everything on our own. We do the marketing on our own. We do the communications on our own. We do the website management on our own. So all of it's us. And those are the hard days. So those are the days where we're just like, oh my God, I'm brain dead. And I need like I take a 3-day weekend if it gets to that point where I'm like, I'm off Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. I need to like wipe the slate clean and start over on Monday with, you know, a refreshed brain essentially. But then there are days where it's just, there's not a lot to do. And that's not a bad thing. I used to think that was a horrible thing. Like I need to be busy from 9 to 5, but no, I think we were conditioned to feel that way because of working for someone else. But I mean, when I worked for someone else, I didn't work nonstop from 9 to 5 or in my case from like 3 a.m. to 12 p.m., whatever it was.
Your former employer is out there going, I knew she wasn't working.
They should have seen me. I was just like socializing around the
She's
newsroom.
She's just admitting to everything today.
No, but it's just, it's the ups and downs of entrepreneurship. There's going to be days where there's a lot of work to do and there's days when there's not. And I don't like to kick myself for it anymore because there are times where I have kicked myself where I tell Nate, I'm like, I feel useless. Like, what else am I going to do? Yeah. Short of going and like now calling people. And I don't think people like that. So I'm not going to cold call. I think social media is the best way for us to do it. So now we're just leaning heavily into content creation this year because we've seen that's worked.
How long did it take you to kind of have that mature outlook?
I don't feel like, I don't know. I wouldn't even say today's just a good day.
Are you convincing yourself?
We got Kajal on a Monday after one of those 3-day weekends. She's fired up and ready. Yeah.
Ready to go.
Feeling good.
No, I mean, I think it just depends on the day. But I really think that it's taken these couple years of learning what it's like to be an entrepreneur because I've never done this before. This is my first time. I've watched my dad do it. And I feel so bad that I ever sat and judged him because it's not easy work. I think this is so much harder than going and working for someone else in some ways, but it's also a lot more freeing. I used to always hate that my dad was home all the time. And as a kid, cause I couldn't go out and hang out with my friends all the time cause he was home. But then I was just like, oh my gosh, I got to spend my whole childhood with my dad being present because he owned his own business. So there's so many positives to it that I just, I wouldn't trade any of this for the world. I would not go back and work for someone else. I would rather have a slow day than go have a busy day working my ass off for half the pay that I get working for somebody else. So
what's, I'm curious if you could talk for a second about how things have changed the vision for Dash D Media from launch to now, kind of how you've adjusted and how things may or may not look differently today than you thought they would 3 years ago. And then roll that forward. What's the future? What are you guys hoping for and planning for in the future? I know you teased a little bit that you'd like to have additional kind of on-screen talent in the agency, but what else do you have, what else do you have planned? What else are you trying to do and grow here?
So actually that's a really good question. Nate and I have been talking about that because we enjoy doing some of these projects that we do, like website landing page videos or social media videos, but we want something that's more like consistent that we can almost like template something for or have more consistency with that we can actually tie ourselves with. Talent is something we would love to do, but we have to have the business to have other talent come in. Otherwise, right now, it's just me and Nate. And for some people, the two of us is enough. But what I would really love to do is get into, like we were actually talking about, maybe getting into the medical industry space after doing that OSHA medical training video. We were like, well, maybe other hospitals need it too, especially in training. Something we both noticed was when I was doing my real estate training, I used Aceable Agent. And I found that to be such an easy way to learn because it was like the spokesperson style video. You could tell it was shot on a green screen, but it was engaging. It was easy to follow along because someone was talking to me, not at me. And it felt like I was following along with the visuals on the screen. So we were like, why don't we do that now? Like maybe for hospitals. I can't imagine how many mistakes are made internally. And this isn't for like external video use for like social media and outward, but we feel like there could be a lot of use for video for internally for companies. My mom went and worked for Amazon briefly, and I remember she told me, she's like, Kajal, they made us watch this horrendous training video that was like pixelated, and it was clearly like from the mid-2000s or something. It was just, it's done really poorly, and no one's going to pay attention to that. We are in a different era of video where attention spans are short, and people have to be somewhat entertained and like connect with the person that's kind of talking to them. I think voiceovers are great, but it can get boring. Yeah. I mean, you're just listening to something and then having to follow along on screen. It's not the same as having somebody, like, it kind of makes it feel like you're in a classroom with somebody. If it's more like having a spokesperson or somebody on screen talking to you. And then
My favorite ones that you should look at getting into are the like workplace harassment training videos with the really awkward demos that they have. That's
Kevin. We've talked about doing that like too. Once a week. Is that how long are you supposed to watch? One like every 3 days. Is there something to that? Or
we've talked about doing that too. We're like, we should really have them redo one of those like corporate HR sexual harassment training videos that are just so dated and awkward. And we've talked about all those things.
If you
made it fun and entertaining.
Oh yeah, no, I
didn't. That's every corporation in America.
Exactly. Those are kind of the stuff we want to get into.
That would look really good before a judge as the corporation's trying to defend itself from a suit and be like, Your Honor, this is the video that we showed them. What do they not get about?
We use scenes from The Office to do our training.
A company we also look up to is HubSpot. And before I got into all this, I didn't know lick about marketing. So I would use HubSpot's Training Academy to teach myself. And I was like, this is literally what we could do for any company. It's a spokesperson-esque style video that mixes the person talking to you with text on screen, with visuals. I'm like, this is such an easy way to learn. And clearly it's working because look at HubSpot today. And I know people are still using those training things. They get certifications and stuff from it. I want to do that for other companies. So other companies can have that same video library, turning some of their blog. I see some companies still post blogs with no video on it. And I'm like, so you're expecting people to read this like 6-page blog? That's kind of boring. And then they're still posting it. And I'm like, imagine if you turn this into a video and you shared it now on social media and you shared it. You could still post the video on your website with the blog if you want. If someone wants to read, they can read. But if they want to watch a video. Yeah. And video actually improves your SEO. So I see so many benefits to video. I see so many avenues that we could go in. It's more just trying to see like which one is going to be the right fit. So we're looking for that right client.
If you don't mind, for the last few minutes before we run out of time here, let's talk for a second and like share the secrets. And I don't mean this like, you know, I don't want anyone to come hire Dash D Media, but like, let's talk about video creation for the entrepreneur that's really small, that's maybe not in a position of like, I can go hire Dash D Media for a more full-scale production, but they want to grab their iPhone and do something now to start getting into video content. Like, hit us with your top tips. What should people be thinking about, whether it's for their website or social media? Do you have like a top three, top five? Like, if you focus on this, you're already like leaps and bounds ahead of the game.
I think it's really good for every business to have some sort of an explainer video on their website, something that just walks people through what to expect. We get a lot of tech companies that come to us to do those kind of videos, which I think is good because like you go on their website and I'm like, I don't understand any of this.
Yeah.
Like we need to make this digestible. Like that's the thing with news. When people are delivering the news to you, it's being written in almost like the fifth grade level so that everybody can understand it. That's kind of what your video needs to convey. That's kind of the language. You have to almost create your videos, not just for your target audience, but for those prospective people, the people that you want to order from you or something. You want to make it easy enough for people to understand. If you're not comfortable getting on camera, there are very inexpensive spokespeople on Fiverr. You could go as low as $50. There are some pro sellers on there for $100 if you just want to get started and test something out and start slowly growing into creating more content and then end up with a company like ours when you have the budget to create more scale, you know, more content at a better quality and stuff like that, you can then come to us. But to me, it's just getting started. I think a lot of people wait till they have everything perfect. Like, I have to have the right camera. Your iPhone camera is a 4K camera. Even the front camera is 4K. So, I mean, you could just literally prop your phone up and just start talking. And I think that's scary for a lot of people too. So it's almost like just lock yourself in a room and practice. Record yourself. You don't have to post it, but it's almost like you just keep doing it until you get comfortable on camera. And again, if you're not comfortable, there are spokespeople on Fiverr or Upwork that you could start really cheap and just to get started, just to start posting something.
Yeah. I love that. I'm one of those that definitely gets hamstrung by the desire to have it be like, I got to have the right set and backdrop. I need the right lighting and things like that. And there's something to be said about just set your phone down and hit record.
That's
you guys should see how I started this business. I have the pictures from when we first started. I mean, it was just like, if you see how my background looked, my green screen was one of those like collapsible ones that ended up breaking. And
$79 on Amazon.
Literally. If it worked, just something to get
started. I take the opposite approach. I overshare. As Kevin will tell you, I come right out of the Barbie movie and I got a hot take 3 seconds later.
That's
that I'm
great.
Share with the world. that doesn't always go over great.
I want to be more like that. I think that's a good thing. I think being able to just post what you think, that's really hard for a lot of people to do. It's even hard for me to do. There are times where I sit there, I'm like, Nate, should I post this? I'm like, I don't know if I should post this. But honestly, it's better to just post something and see what happens. Your audience will tell you one way or not if they like it.
Have you desensitized? Like, I forget that there's even people out there, really. You know?
Oh, yeah.
I
don't even think about it anymore.
I mean, I know there
also,
is.
I mean, I had years of practice from TV, but yeah, no, you completely forget. You don't think about that stuff anymore.
All the people
and
who say meme
troll,
things to you.
Let them. Love a troll. I love a troll who comments too, because I'm like, you're just helping my engagement.
You're just driving engagement. Yeah.
Driving views.
I used to block them. I was just telling a group. I went on a social media club. They were like, will you come out and talk to us? And I was like, sure. And I was like, one of the things it says is like, no negativity. I was like, if somebody is trolling you, don't block them, because they'll just, you're taking a negative action back. And all you're going to do is you're going to make an enemy for life. And some of those trolls, if you look at all the things they've ever said to you, sometimes they're trolling you and sometimes they're contributing in a constructive way. But every single time they're driving engagement. And if you could just allow yourself to be tenderized. I am so tenderized. You can say anything to me.
You have to build a really thick skin. I mean, and you will. Over time, it does happen. You are not going to care what people think by just putting yourself out there, putting your company out there on social media. It takes a lot of courage, but it's so worth it at the end. Honestly, the outcome of just posting your stuff out there, that's free marketing. Social media is literally free marketing.
Yeah, I love it. It really is.
We've certainly found that to be true in our business.
Yeah. Same with us.
Well, it's interesting. And last thing I'll say, and then we can close and let you plug your business. But there are so many big businesses that are doing it where they're not spending Tesla. Who are the guys that created that energy drink that's on every shelf?
Oh,
Prime.
Like Logan Paul.
The Prime guys,
Paul,
spend $0 on marketing. Zero.
Yeah.
They're just making Barstool Sports. You know, I'm not endorsing any particular company here, but, you know, they don't spend money on content. They create content and make money hand over fist as a result of it. But what you can do it in a much small, we're doing it on a Main Street level in our business. And it is a business cheat code. And I don't know how long it'll continue this way, or if it'll become diluted or oversaturated, but certainly at least in this period of time, if you're not trying to build a personal brand or a brand for your business on social media, you're leaving
such a mistake.
Infinite amount of money on the table. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Such a mistake not to do that. And video right now, in my opinion, is content king. It is the best way to put yourself out there. People are more willing to watch a video than retext. So, I mean,
we're doing it right
post.
Now. This is a little
meta. Exactly.
So I'm having like one of those moments. I'm remembering I'm on a podcast right now. Yeah. All right, Kevin, any last questions or should we wrap?
No last questions. Let's wrap up, because we always like to let people plug what they're working on and doing. Obviously, we've talked a lot about Dash C Media. Let people know where to find that. And anything else you're passionate about or interested in, feel free to plug and call out.
Yeah. If anybody's looking for a video spokesperson for their company, if you're not comfortable putting yourself out there and you want myself or Nate, former news anchors, to kind of be the spokesperson of your company and help create your content from our studio space here in Dallas-Fort Worth, we're happy to do that. You can contact us at www.dashtimedia.com. It's dashtimedia.com.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Mundane Millionaires. If you enjoyed what you heard in this episode, make sure to follow Mundane Millionaires wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts. See you next time.